What's up, everyone? It's Roger and James here from It Is Keener Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking about quite a lot of games. There's quite a bit of news this week from some video games. We're going to be talking about some Disney Infinity 4, Fantastic Four coming to the Marvel games. We'll also be talking about the Alien Blackout game, some Kingdom Hearts 3, and finally some Blu-rays as well that got announced. So it was almost that kind of thing, like it was the first week after Christmas of everyone being back to work and everyone had to send out all their press releases all at once this week.
I mean, marketing people have to work too, so.
Yes, so they're all back. So let's kick off with, I know that this topic is very dear to James's heart. This week, some Disney Infinity 4.0 video of like pre-cut early alpha footage. Now the game is not coming out. This is not coming out. This is still canceled. It's been nearly 4 years, but some footage came out showing off like a world in Aladdin, and it was apparently the code name was Disney Infinity 4.0 Kingdoms, and it featured like Aladdin and all the different characters from the previous game, and they had a little boss fight with Jafar. And it was one of those stories of like, I think there were some people that were like, you know, the Disney Infinity fans were like, yay, and then there's a load of us as well that was Disney Infinity fans were like, oh no. It's been a long time since we've heard anything about anything Disney Infinity. I'll be honest, I was never expecting anything more else to come out, but they certainly did come out with this. It was quite a long video as well. It was about 5 minutes or so. It wasn't like it was just rushed and it looked like somebody just created a toy box. This was some specialized video footage.
I have no idea.
No.
I didn't watch it.
You didn't?
I don't.
No.
Yeah, I can't be bothered. It's a game that's not coming out.
Yeah, because this is the thing, when you messaged me and you're going, I really do not get why people are still excited about it. And it was one of those things of seeing this footage, it was a bit like, this looks great, but I'll be honest, I don't know if it actually would have stood up the test of time if it got released now, if it was out. Say that it was back in September and they'd released it. The world has moved on a lot since 2013, since the first Disney Infinity game came out. And yeah, I don't know. I sort of watched it myself and was just like, this looks great, but it just looks more of the same. And I know that's what a lot of people liked about Disney Infinity, but it didn't. They are having this world where all the characters were running around in it, like a play set with everybody. But at the same time, it still looked way too similar to what we'd seen before.
I mean, that was the impression from the single still that I saw on the Diz Kingdom article.
Yeah.
Posted, and that was it. So, I mean, but keeping in mind, of course, the game was being developed while Disney Infinity 3.0 was still being worked on. So it makes sense that it would look pretty much the same. But yeah, even if they magically somehow got the money to make a Disney Infinity 4, they got the old band back together at Avalanche or whatever, they'd have to start from scratch anyway. They couldn't use this anymore. It just wouldn't fly anymore. And they'd probably have to develop for the next-gen consoles, PS5, Xbox 2, 7, 20, I don't know, whatever they'd
be. Yeah.
Assuming there is an Xbox, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't use any of this, whatever...
No, I think it was one of those situations of, I mean, it was very interesting seeing this footage out there because they obviously were working on it. They had the plan, because this is the thing with video game development is it takes years. They are working on stuff years in advance. So when this stuff was obviously cancelled, they had already begun early stages. They were working on, you know, even down to starting to doing some of the cutscenes and stuff and working out some of the details. But because they'd already built the framework for the three previous games, it's like a lot of sequels, a lot of the hard work had been done. It was just polishing and making things better. And on one hand, it's like I said, there's a massive gap in the market, which Disney are not filling very well. Even though we are talking about a number of video games today, they have left a big mark. And this footage just shows they have missed it and they've not filled that void. And like we said, it's been nearly, it was 2015 when 3.0 got released.
I mean, that was the year I was at D23, met several of the Infinity people, you know, was hanging out at the booth at D23. So yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it was just one of those situations of it just being, it came out of nowhere and it looks great, but at the same time, it was just like, Ooh, we finally let this thing go, and this kind of video. It was interesting, but at the same time, it was a little bit bittersweet because a little bit more than like the Rogue One and the Moana details, because I still think they missed a boat with the Moana one. But this game was still very, very rough, and it would have been a few years away from going. But I'm definitely check out the full trailer, if you or the full kind of rundown where he kind of went into the details. You'll find the link on the article on Disc Kingdom. Okay, but let's talk about now a video game which is coming out. And in 2 weeks, we've got Kingdom Hearts 3, which is going to be hitting PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. And to make sure that fans aren't spoiled, Square Enix announced last week that they're going to be adding the secret video and the ending video are going to be downloadable content that comes for free about 2 days or a day after the game launches. So there's been a lot of these games getting out early, some retailers pulling that out early to make sure that didn't happen. They put it on as DLC. On one hand, I like it. On the second hand, I don't like that. But it's definitely an interesting way that they're kind of making sure that things aren't spoiled for people.
Yeah, I'm actually not a fan of this method personally. I think that I understand why they're doing it, especially because they have such a crazy amount of control, or they try to have such a crazy amount of control over these games when they're released, that yeah, they don't want it spoiled. But making people go to the store, download it for something that should be included. Yeah, I'm kind of iffy on that. But I mean, this is Square Enix. This is the Kingdom Hearts games. There were large sections of 2.8 and 0.2 where we couldn't record anything unless you had an external capture device. This is the same group that doesn't let you adjust the volume of any of the Kingdom Hearts games, music or any of that nonsense. They have this, I want to say, overinflated sense of how important their story is. I know I'm going to piss people off with that comment, but it's true. They really think that they've got some grand opus going on here. It's like, no, it's a story with Sora and Goofy and Donald beating up little black heartless creatures and all that stuff. It's not this great grand thing, despite what some people might want to say.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I mean, I would say I'm trying to avoid spoilers, but in all honesty, if the entire game got spoiled, I wouldn't really know what was going on anyway. And this is someone, I've completed like four of the Kingdom Hearts games, so it's not like I still haven't got a clue what's really going on. I don't really enjoy that part of it, the storyline. I wouldn't say it kind of pulls me in. I like the Disney World. I like battling. I like seeing what they're doing and the overall story. And I'm really looking forward to jumping in and playing through Kingdom Hearts 3. But yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed as well that they have had to do this because of the way that leaks and stuff happen. But also, for preservation point of view, like you've brought a game and then you're not going to get it, not going to make a massive difference to me. I'm going to buy the digital version. I decided I'm just waiting until the few days before I pre-order it. There's just no point pre-ordering digital games.
There's no point
And yeah.
pre-ordering games, period.
Well, I know I'm going to buy this. I know I'm going to play this day one. So it's a little bit along the lines of I might as well pre-order it to make sure it's all downloaded on my hard drive because I know I'm going to. And that's kind of the main point, really. Is I like to go in when I can download them. I've just started getting into digital games. It's just becoming a lot easier now. But there is that side of me that goes, if you did buy the disc, it's incomplete in say 10 years. But the way the patches and stuff are, there was a few other bits and pieces that they've added with the upgrades and stuff. But I thought it was kind of quite interesting the way they've done this. But again, this is the trouble of when they try and get games out to retailers, things leak. When they end up on Walmart's early, but also it's why they stop sending small independent game companies, little shops, games early now. They get them after the big retailers because so many of them were selling them early, and yeah, they just kind of had to crack down on all of that.
Yeah, and I can't fault them for that. We might be taking shots at the broad Kingdom Hearts story and its sense of importance, but at the same time, there's no reason that these games should be leaking out early. And it's It really is annoying when retailers, whether it's the big box stores like Walmart or your independent store down the street, when they're selling games early, it's not good consumer practice or good competitive practice. They're really kind of screwing with the market, and all of the companies need to make sure that it's consistent, because you don't want to ship games to those little independent stores or to Walmart if they're going to break the street date, whether intentionally or otherwise. And all the other competitors are now going to stuck in that problem of, do we also break the release date? Because we've got to be competitive. We want to sell the game, and we know people are buying it from this other location, but they shouldn't. They've got to remain ethical. They've got to have a good, agreement with the companies. So,
I
yeah,
always,
I'm with them on that one.
It's always that thing that I think usually I would say most of the time at supermarkets and the big chains, it's done by mistake because the people selling it maybe don't realize, or it's just on a
Don't
shelf.
care.
Whereas at small retailers, the game stores, they know what they're doing, and they're trying to get trying to they were using that as a way of getting gamers in to pre-order with them rather than with the big stores, because there was that thing of getting it early, but people cracked down on it. I know with some of the one of the online retailers I was using, they used to always arrive a day or two early. That started slipping, and then it started getting release day or the day after with the shipping, and it was just like nah. And just the way that I've moved on, but definitely cool the way that they have done this, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this as we're going forward. I mean, on some of the games like the Disneyland Adventures, the game wasn't even on the disc. You put the disc in and then it downloaded it. But I'm hopefully
When
people don't have to do that.
was the last time you bought a disc that didn't immediately trigger like a 20 or 30 gig download? I can't actually remember. Oh, Nintendo. Okay,
The
Nintendo.
only one I will go with is the Nintendo Switch, where you can put a game, a disc, a card in, and it will let you play. I know over Christmas I got Shadow of the Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed, pop the discs in. Yeah, massive, great big day one patches to fix those problems. So it's just becoming
I
standardized.
mean, and it's not even day one patches. A lot of the times you put the disc in and it's like, all right, we're going to go ahead and load the entire game onto your hard drive right now, either download or off the disc. And yeah, even Switch has got day one patches now too. I mean, they're not the standard on the Switch, I'll give you that, but we have been seeing more and more games have day one patches on Switch as well, which is annoying. But I think it's just one of those things where, if you're going to give a game as a gift for a birthday, a Christmas, or whatever holiday you celebrate, etc., more and more you kind of have to be like, if you've got access to the console that it's going to be played on, load it up in advance and hope they don't notice or something like that. But yeah.
It is a pain. I know Christmas Day morning is like, yay! Right, I'm putting the disc in now while I go off and have a bath. It was just
Oh,
like,
yeah.
it was basically.
But it's more than just that, because everybody on Christmas morning is putting those discs in, and it is basically a DDoS attack on the registration server. So your download speed for your what was it, 80 gig Red Dead Redemption 2 or whatever, that's going to take like 3 days. Good luck. But yeah.
I know last night I went to fire up Star Wars Battlefront 2, thought I'll jump in and play some of the bits and pieces on there and played that for a while. 7 gig download straight into back into Assassin's Creed for the evening. Just didn't even it's like it like a 2 hours later, it's downloaded. It's like, okay, great. That was my evening's Star Wars Battlefront completely out the window because of a patch. But nevertheless, let's jump over to another story that we kind of talked about last week of there was a new Alien video game, or say video game, a new Alien game coming out, which called Blackout. It officially announced it pretty much just after we recorded. It's going to be coming to mobile devices and stuff. I think it was January.
I don't know if they gave an
I'm
exact
just,
date, but before the end of the month.
yeah, it was. It's coming out on January the 24th on the App Store, Google Play, and Amazon One. The terror of the alien is brought to life in Alien Blackout. Tried to stay alive while trapped aboard a crippling space station carrying a deadly alien. I'm not a good exomorph. As they tirelessly hunt you and your crew, outsmart the perfect hunter, and go on. And it's set like between Alien and. But now, this is the interesting thing. It's actually a paid game. I think it's like $4.99. You buy the game, you play the game. There's no microtransactions, there's no live service. It is literally a download and thing. So when that does come available, I will download it, play it, I'll do a let's play on it as well when it comes out, because it's like, yeah, cool. I kind of go, okay, I see what you're doing here. They apparently Fox did come out and say they are working on other console games. They've been quite open about the fact of they realized there was a backlash, and they've been kind of like, no, we are doing alien video games as well. This was just what it is.
Yeah, you think they would have wanted to lead with that though, given what we saw happen with Command and Conquer, and what was the other one? The other big franchise where they're like, it's a mobile game. It's
Oh,
like
Diablo, that whole thing of,
Diablo, right?
yeah,
Diablo,
it's
where
just
they're
an
like, it's a new game.
April
It's a new game in a franchise you love on phone, and the entire crowd just goes, what?
Boo.
Boo. Yeah. You would have thought they would learn. It's not exactly like there is a trend of people going, oh, you're bringing my favorite franchise to my phone. No. And I mean, I get it. This is, like you said, supposed to be a more proper experience. It's not supposed to be reliant on microtransactions. It's not going to be like, your flashlight is out of power, paying 25 or 99 cents to get more batteries or wait 3 hours or something like that. No, it should be a proper game. So points to them for that. However, again, this is one of those things where like it's a pseudo sequel prequel thing to Alien Isolation. It's got, that riding onto it. And you're kind of like, yeah, I'm not really expecting to get the same kind of experience that I got from Isolation in a mobile game. And you can just kind of feel that whole, I mean, I don't think we were even particularly enthusiastic about it to begin with, but there was so much potential to it. Like it could have VR stuff on the PlayStation or the PC. It could maybe even be like continue to have Kinect support, even though no one has Kinects anymore. Stuff like that, and like it's on your phone. Yay!
Yeah,
No.
it's one of those really weird things. I was reading a great article yesterday on gameindustry.biz about games closing and things closing down and the way that affects people and how mobile games are going through this zone right now of what they called back about 10 years ago when the double A video game market kind of crashed, where Disney got out of making kind of movie tie-ins, and that whole market kind of died out as customers wanted either triple A or indie. And they're saying now this big thing really, if so many games are closing down. And I was thinking, I was reading this going, man, Disney really kind of fall into this thing of when a game is either no longer profitable or that is never made any money because so few mobile games do make money on a live service, and how we're at this point now where customers are a used to it, but the whole thing about like when they close down and they lose all their transactions, people should expect it, but also that they're not expecting as many games to start kind of coming through anymore because it's oversaturated. And I was sort of reading this going, wow, that really did kind of tie very much into what I feel Disney and I think Fox Next are really going to suffer with this because they seem to be throwing spaghetti at the walls at the minute, trying to see what sticks. And I was thinking, this is very much what seems to be going on at Disney.
Yeah, and I mean, Foxnet doesn't even necessarily have a good track record at the moment. They had that Planet of the Apes VR game or whatever, which got terrible reviews.
I still need to play it. I have
No,
got
you
it.
don't.
I
Really?
but I ha well I install I've got it installed on my PlayStation. I just haven't I've been kind of jumping in with Astro Bot and Assassin's Creed, just haven't got around to trying it out yet. Should probably do a let's play or something on
Astro
that one
Bot's
as well.
fantastic.
It is. And
So.
it's just that thing I think of, it's like Marvel and Disney, like over the Christmas period they were dropping games services, right? And it does feel like it's like right now Marvel have got like four tiered Marvel games, and it might that's probably a better run than trying to run seven or eight, even if they are different. But and I think Disney in the same boat, there's only really a few games out there in it. And I just read this article and I was thinking, wow, that really did hit to me, like Disney did got hit with a double A crash. And now they're kind of being hit with this same thing with Disney game with their mobile games of that kind of losing its muster.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's not just Disney. We're seeing delistings all over the place, or companies being like, "Yeah, you can still play the game, but nothing new's coming out for it." That kind of thing. And honestly, we've been expecting this for a while. The consumer backlash against free games, which actually cost thousands of dollars to play effectively, is been a long time coming. I think consumers are finally at that point where just like, it's not worth the investment anymore. We're sick of being milked. And there will still be a couple, because a couple of these games are still doing extremely well. Disney Magic Kingdom seems to be doing all right. Star Wars: Galaxy of Heroes, Marvel Contest of Champions—they're all, they have their base, and they're still making money, and they're still near the tops of both the iTunes and the Android app stores. But the rest are just kind of falling away. And I think, kind of what you were alluding to, that Disney is kind of going more for—I don't want to say quality, because quality is not really the right word—but they're kind of focusing on a few small successful games and letting all the rest just be like, no. I mean, sure, they're turning a profit. Like Avengers Academy was still turning a profit even towards the end, but just like we saw with Disney Infinity, they're going, we've got money invested into this and it's getting this return, but if we took that money and invested it in that, we would get that return, and that return is better than what we're getting now, so let's put the money into that instead.
I think the big problem as well is trying to keep doing those updates of trying to get people to come back, trying to keep updating. And this kind of ties in, I think, like Disney Magic Kingdoms, you know, they just added the Cinderella characters, you know, I would say very much D-list
Wait,
characters, you
what's
know.
Cinderella characters? Because they already had Prince Charming and
They
Cruella.
added Lady Tremaine and the two stepsisters. And yeah, they are very D-list, like, you know, D-list characters. But I think this is the advantage of the games like this and Disney Heroes as well, where by having the entire Disney catalog, they can keep spreading out those character releases to keep bringing people in and keep having a little. And it's the same thing with Marvel, and then we'll kind of slide into that, where they have just announced a ton of new updates for their Marvel games. They're bringing Fantastic Four into the suite of games. So, but they've even done that differently. I think like Future Fight has added like the Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom, and a few other characters all at once, whereas Contest of Champions just brought in the Thing, you know. And you can see how they're all trying out different ideas. And Puzzle Quest has had them for a while, but they've kind of tweaked things. But and also, I think it was Strike Force is having one character in there, but like say, Future Fight just went and threw them all in there.
But that kind of works for Future Fight because they've got such a massive roster at this point. I know Contest of Champions does too, but Future Fight tends to do stuff in waves. They tend to be like, we're going to add a whole bunch of X-Men characters, and there will be like a sequence of events that you go through to unlock and upgrade the X-Men characters. So that's kind of been their model. It works for them. They normally release characters like three or four at a time. The Fantastic Four, of course, more than that, but it for such a big name, it makes sense. And then Contest of Champions, with the focus of building up an individual hero rather than a team of heroes or a big team of heroes, it makes more sense for them to drop in just the Thing, and then maybe the Human Torch will follow, and then Invisible Woman, and so on. But yeah, I think they're also experimenting and seeing which is more successful, and whichever we see kind of bringing in more money, or more players, or both, will be the one that kind of they shift to for future games, assuming there are future games at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like. I mean, the only thing is, I like with Contest of Champions, and it's one of the reasons I kind of play with it, but I don't like it. Is like, say, I wanted to play the Thing now, I have to go into random generated boxes to see if I'm lucky enough to get it. Whereas I like just to pay upfront, buy it, and I know I've got it. So that's one of my problems with that. The other games are a little bit better at that than that. But in some ways, I think stretching out the content makes more sense. It gives you multiple hits. The way that mobile games are about logging in daily and constantly updating and constantly checking in, bringing in six or seven characters all at once, dropping them is great, but you're only going to get that hit once. Whereas if Contest of Champions have got them all coming in slowly, they've got a more chance of getting you to keep dropping in.
Right, and I think it works for Future Fight, dropping everything like a whole bunch of characters at once, because they have such a consistent flow of characters. So they can drop six characters, and in a couple of weeks they'll drop another handful of characters. But Contest of Champions, they do tend to focus on that single character for a little while, and then they bring in a new character, and then they bring in a new character. And it might also be like development process. Contest of Champions might take a lot longer to create a character than Future Fight does. I don't know.
But also, yeah, I mean, the big thing really for me was more about the idea that having the Fantastic Four being in the games, because I mean, you look at it and you think of like the last 5, 10 years, all we've had is X-Men and Fantastic Four being creeped back in of like this like dirty little secret that Marvel didn't want to talk about and didn't push, canceled comic books, pushed them to the back, put them into other things, and never even had them in the games. And now the Fox deal is due to be done by next month. They seem to have just, that's all gone out the window. Fantastic Four are back in favor, and in some ways, what's old is new again by letting them go for a few years. Now they're all, people are excited about them, and the same thing with the X-Men, and I think that's definitely a cool thing.
And it's one of those things where I think we've talked about it before. Sometimes letting these characters go out of circulation, whether or not it's for entirely petty reasons, it helps because, the Fantastic Four, the book wasn't selling all that well, before they canceled it. The X-Men were kind of floundering for a bit, had a bit of bloat, still have a bit of bloat in the X lineup. But having these past couple of years where people are talking about the Fantastic Four and Fox and the X-Men, and why are they getting rid of Wolverine, and why are the Fantastic Four just kind of being wiped out, and why are the Inhumans replacing the mutants, has built up anticipation for these titles. So whether that was their intention or not, and I think it wasn't, I think their intention was to try to nuke these properties to get into a fight with Fox, it has kind of worked out for them in the end.
It's just kind of, I think it's going to work forward, and it's just nice seeing them being put in there, and that whole issue of them being kind of not mentioned, because you'd think that these characters would have been in there since day one, because it was always that big thing of like in the Marvel Heroes game, they removed them from the console version when they brought it in. That was how strong the thing was. I mean, they didn't remove them from the Alliance reboots, but yeah, it's just kind of interesting to see where they've gone with those Marvel characters of they were completely just gone and now back bang, suddenly Fantastic Week and they are everywhere.
I mean, to remove them from the Ultimate Alliance games, they would have had to have actually done some work on the Ultimate Alliance games. Yeah, not a sore point or anything like that.
No.
But yeah, it's good to see them back. It's good to see them being reintegrated. And I mean, I've never been a huge fan of the Fantastic Four, but they are Marvel's first family. They are, the character that Stan or the characters that Stan Lee basically built the Marvel legacy off of. So, and they do have some of the best villains.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. When you take like Doctor Doom, you've also got Silver Surfer,
Galactus.
Galactus, and the
Oh
Skrulls.
man.
Well, yeah, because
Just kidding on Mole Man.
yeah, kind of the Underminer.
Well, they've actually got quite a few really good villains when you get down to it. Annihilus, pretty much anything in the Microverse, anything involving alternate dimensions, and then of course the connection to Silver Surfer and all of his villains and so on. So, yeah, I've always said about the Fantastic Four, like the four of them, not particularly interesting, but the catalog of characters that they bring with them is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, for me personally, I know it's like Doctor Doom is going to be the big one that I think is going to be a big impact on future on the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and obviously that ties in of all these movies and everything that comes along with it. It affects everything that comes down the line of what they're doing at the top, filters down through the games, through the toys, through the books, through the movies, etc. And it's just going to be nice to have all of that all into one place when the deal looks to be set to be pretty. I think Marvel are, I think it was done from the Marvel point of view, because they apparently, on a side note, some of the Marvel movies that they were working on, Gambit, Deadpool, X-Force, or X-Force, Deadpool, and Multiple Man, and all these movies that, Fox were working on, they are apparently all done. They're not doing any of them. they've got Dark Phoenix and New Mutants in the can, and that's all they're doing. And being, we all knew that was going to happen, but it's coming through now that they are. And I think, I still personally feel like Marvel just releasing 3 movies a year and the TV series is enough, and getting rid of those tiered movies is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and now that they have the ability, or will soon have the ability, to quality control the movies, we can have a bit more faith in them. Like, Gambit was stuck in development hell for years.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum was attached to it, unattached, attached to it, unattached. Directors came and went, and writers came and went. So it's best to just kind of write that one off.
And then,
you know, from what we've seen, pretty much all the other movies have been the same deal. The Fox has been so inconsistent with these movies, because you get stuff like Logan or X-Men 1 and 2 or the Deadpool movies. But for those, you've got Wolverine Origins, X-Men 3. Mm. You know, some people argue things like Days of Future Past and stuff like that didn't quite live up. I really enjoyed them, but I understand they weren't. If you want to look at them like from an objective point of view, they're not particularly good movies, but they were fun. But yeah, the track record there is very hit and miss. And you can say the same for some of the middle tier Marvel movies, like say Thor 2, Iron Man 3, kind of in that area. But on the whole, their track record is much better. So it's much, it's a better idea of just scrap all those plans, let the X-Men and the Fantastic Four get brought in organically in a way that makes sense, and just everything before that's gone.
So there's also a whole other side of things where, like, they don't want the Fox teams to make it, because that means it might come under some of their old contracts, so they'll want to keep it under Marvel. So lots of bits and pieces going on there. So let's shift away now from movies that are not being made to movies that have been made and are being released. So first off, we've got there was news that the Nutcracker in the Four Realms will be released on DVD, Blu-ray, and 4K. I'm just going to check the date. I think it was January 29th in the US, a little bit later in Europe. I think we get it in March. So it's coming out. I thought that was really quick. I mean, I know it's technically probably only about 3 months since the movie came out, but that seems like a really fast turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, movies have been turning around faster and faster on the release, especially with now them doing digital releases of movies like 2 weeks before the physicals even hit the stores. So the date just keeps creeping
closer, which they're not doing on this one. They are.
No, they're not.
They did the same thing with Christopher Robin. It does feel like when the movies aren't done as well as they wanted, they do just tend to just do one hit and go. They've almost along the lines of, yeah, this isn't worth the no one's going to buy this early to get it.
Which is funny, because there's almost no overhead on digital sales. Mm. It's like they could throw it up there, and even if just 10 people bought it, it's straight money for them. But
I really wish as well that with these movies, that when you guys get the digital and the physical versions, they didn't do that over here for Disney movies. We don't have the Disney movie anywhere. That none of that exists. So it's like me with digital movies. We don't. If you had the, like you guys over there, where if you buy it on one, you can watch it on all of them, and it's all in your like digital locker. We don't have that here, so I'm still buying them on Blu-ray, because digital is still a bit like messy of like how it used to be years ago for you. So I'd love to have the full version set, but they don't. It's still on Blu-rays here.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just kind of become expected here, where movies that don't have a digital copy are like, wait, what? Why would I pay the full price for something I'm only getting partial? But yeah, I'm sure it's going to become the standard pretty much worldwide at some point. I don't know when that some point will be, but
yeah, I know personally that would be something I'd like to do more of, getting into digital ones. But I'm just going to touch now on the other release that was announced this week. It was kind of the worst kept secret in terms of when this was coming out. We got The Little Mermaid, the 30th anniversary of that. That's going to be coming out February 25th. And there'll be, again, there's a digital blue DVD and digital Blu-ray and DVD copy. There's also the 4K version. Target have got a special version of it with a special book. Again, we don't get the signature collections over here in the UK because they're all out on Blu-ray constantly. They seem to have stopped doing the vault. You walk into the supermarket and you'll have the whole collection of Disney DVD Blu-rays just sat there 20 all the time. They kind of abandoned that idea over here. But great to see them kind of reissuing this one again.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see it's going to be in 4K as well. Not really planning on getting it, but still, the fact that they're going to start releasing the old classics in 4K or continue to release the old classics in 4K is great because people do love those high quality, ultra high definition. Now, of course, you know, 4K versus 1080, actually, most people can't really tell the difference. And by most, I mean everyone can't really tell the difference. The difference being the inclusion of HDR, which should be part of this as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't gone down the 4K route. The big reason for that was I still have the original Xbox. I think if I'd upgraded to the Xbox One X, I would probably start buying them there. If the PS4 Pro that I brought had a 4K device, I probably would have start buying them. My big problem is there's a £10 price jump. You know, it's £10 on DVD, £15 on Blu-ray, or £25 on 4K. It's like, yeah, these, I mean, I remember paying £25 for DVDs when they first came out, but yeah, it's hard to kind of justify that £10 more for, I mean, for arguably not a big enough difference. It was £10. I think it was £5. I might be a bit more inclined, but a £10 jump is quite a lot for, yeah, for, like you say, 4K. The only reason I can see the difference on 4K really normally is on the BBC documentaries with David, you know, dynasties and things like this, where you can really see the difference. But on most movies, I really struggle to see the difference.
Well, again, this is part of what I do. So I do actually have a fair bit of knowledge of this. The visual difference for humans between 8K, 4K, and 1080p is almost completely negligible. It's such a small difference in our perception that 4K by itself is not worth upgrading to. 8K is not worth upgrading to, and yes, that is starting to be a thing. The difference is HDR, high dynamic range. It's what makes the colors pop more, the blacks blacker, the whites brighter, gives you a higher contrast. And it could be added to 1080p, but TV manufacturers don't want to do that because they need to sell their spiffy 4K. So they've kind of associated HDR with 4K, but it's actually not. But,
I mean, quite often when I'm watching TV, either on like the Amazon app or if I'm on my PlayStation 4, my HDR icon will come up on the screen telling me. And it is that thing of playing on the PS4 Pro in 4K. It's not 4K, but it's HDR. Like you say, it does make a difference to the colors. I think if you did screen by screen, you can tell. You just get used to the upper thing. Because I find, like, for example, on Amazon, they include 4K and HDR and stuff on their videos as standard. Whereas on Netflix, I'm still on the box standard version because it's like think of like, well, I can upgrade the bigger version, but it doesn't really impact enough to do it. My wife wouldn't now always likes watching in HD, but 4K is that thing of, I mean, I know when I'm streaming, like we were trying to stream Dynasties in 4K from the iPlayer app, it kept buffering. It was just too powerful. It's just for me for streaming 4K yet.
No, streaming in 4K is not a good idea unless you have a super amazing connection and you don't have a data cap, because 4K will destroy your data cap if you do a lot of it. That's why if I were going to do 4K movies, if I were going to purchase 4K movies, I would actually be going back to physical for those. I do almost all my purchasing digitally. Almost every movie I own is digital. Almost every comic I own is digital. Almost every video game I own is digital. But if I was doing 4K movies, for now, I would be buying them, at Best Buy or Target.
It's also very difficult for me as well, thinking along the lines, like say, about the 8K, you know, that thing of, like, getting in heavily into 4K, and I'm already going, well, out on the one behind it is already coming up behind. And I think as well, being an old fart of having previously brought Betamaxes, VHS, I did once look at Laserdiscs, DVDs, HD DVDs, Blu-rays, I am not willing to buy them again on physical. I think I've just got to that point of, I could buy Star, you know, if they release a 4K version of Star Wars, it's like, I've already brought them four times over with, I don't want to buy them again. And I think I've, and it's that thing, I think 4K, I'm looking at it going, it's already obsolete. And that's not a good sign when you're in, it's not enough for me to make me buy into it. Cause I, like you say, you can't see the difference.
Yeah. And I mean, 8K is not going to provide much of a difference either. I mean, you can only get HDR up to a certain point. They're even already talking about 16K. I know that there aren't any purchasable televisions that are 16K, but they've been developed. The only thing keeping them from pushing 8K or 16K as the new standard, of course, is the price on the television sets and the Blu-ray players and stuff. But they want to get it out because they have built up this, this is something that my company is interested in. But this constant idea of your TV is disposable, and it shouldn't be. It's a multi-hundred dollar purchase in most cases, but they want you buying a new one every single, not every single year, but let's say every 2 to 3 years. They want you to go, oh, I've only got a 4K television, but 8Ks with the Ultra 8 HDR are in the market now. I need to get with the times. And that's what they really want. And the improvements are becoming smaller and smaller and smaller with each generation. Because you can tell the difference between VHS and DVD. There's a huge difference. DVD to Blu-ray, there's a huge difference. Blu-ray to 4K, not so much.
No. I mean, the thing is, I mean, using my TV primarily as a smart device as well, I think has changed how I'm looking, you know, like you say, about upgrading and the apps and updating and all the rest of it is, you know, when you used to buy a TV and used to keep it, you know, we used to have a black and white television that was 40 years old. It just kept working until they turned off analog, but, and you had no inputs, but smart TVs are going to require you to kind of, and then the apps start getting slower and they just, you know, that thing of you're getting into a device, and televisions have never really been like that. Yeah, you had to keep upgrading, but if I bought a new television, that was it for 5 to 10 years. Like, whereas now, like you say, they want you to start buying them more regularly.
And people do. I mean, that's why they continue to develop these new TVs. And it's not even, heck, it's not even going from 4K to 8K. It's like, well, we've got the 4K HDR, now we've got the 4K HDR10, we've got the 4K HDR Adobe, whatever their thing is called. Vizio's got their own thing, and it's just like, I mean, if they were like $40 purchases, all right, yeah, sure. But for a good one, for a 4K television, that really will be able to see the difference between that TV and your previous TV. $700 minimum. And that's on a Black Friday sale.
Yeah. I mean, it's that kind of thing, like you say, it's all the equipment that goes with it. And I think as we go more digital, you're going to see much more advantage of where, you know, I know like with the iTunes, if you buy it through them, they are offering like 4K upgrades included with it. And they realize that that's going to be the way they're going to get you, because I think the concept of getting you to keep buying them, I don't think it's working the same way as it used to, because like you say, they can't make that big enough advance to make you to jump up to go to make you buy these movies again.
Yeah. And I mean, it kind of worked when Blu-ray was coming out. You could buy the Blu-ray and it had the DVD in it. And yeah. They're still doing it now, obviously, but you could kind of be, oh, I don't have a Blu-ray player, but it's just a little bit extra to get the Blu-ray package, which also has the DVD, which also has the digital version, going back to what we were talking about earlier. So when I do have a Blu-ray player, I've already got movies that I can watch with it, and I can still watch them now. I know the 4Ks are doing the same thing. They're packaged with Blu-ray. Sometimes they're packaged with DVDs as well. So you can go, I don't have a 4K player yet. I can't watch Infinity War in 4K, but it's got the Blu-ray in it as well. So,
and like I said, I would do it. I would have done it, but that price difference is just too big to have something sat there doing nothing.
The price difference is getting better though on the individual discs. Like, yeah, the release date you're still looking at $20 over here for the Blu-ray, probably $29-ish dollars, give or take a sale for the 4K. But this past Christmas, so many of the 4Ks discs were on sale for under $10. Some of them were on sale for under $5. And when we're not talking about like the budget throwaway stuff, like if I'd really wanted to, I think Spider-Man Homecoming was $7.50. Deadpool 1 and 2 were like $7.50 each. Yeah. Some of the other Marvel ones, not Infinity War, not Black Panther, not the most recent ones, but some of the I want to say older, but that makes me think like Iron Man 1 or 2. I'm talking about like a couple of years ago. Yeah. Those ones were very reasonably priced. So the pricing is equalizing.
Yeah. I think as well, it's having gone from the buying DVD versions of videos I already owned. I didn't do that with Blu-rays. And like now, I tend to buy very selected Blu-rays. I'll only tend to buy the Disney movies and the Marvel and the Star Wars. I don't really tend to buy anything else anymore because I just don't tend to watch them. I know with the Disney ones, I will reuse them and watch them a few times. But it's just kind of one of those things, really. And even that, I feel like it's changing. But nevertheless, that is this week's episode of the Disney Kingdom podcast sorted. So thank you very much for watching or listening. Make sure you do subscribe either on YouTube or on the podcast services. James, where can they find you?
Find me at heroiclegacy.com.
Okay. Go check us out over at DisKingdom.com, and you can like and follow us as well on Twitter and Facebook. Anyway, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.